From the land to Grand Theater Bursity in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 17th day of July, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson from TGM right here in Champaign County. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will join us to discuss the forecast across the nation. And along the way, we'll talk with the president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association about SAF, or Sustainable Aviation Fuel. September corn today in Chicago settled 2.25 cents higher at $3.98. December at 4.11¾ up 3, and the March at 4.25 also 3 higher. August soybeans 6¾ higher, settlement price there at $10.97¼. November down 2¼ at $10.41. Soft red winter wheat settled the December up 8 cents, and the hard red December up 10½. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com, now joins us from the elevator here in Champaign County. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Good, because this is the second day we have some green on the screen, at least when you and I are talking. But may have changed by the time we get to the end of the day today. Just as a reminder, each week Greg and I talk in the 11 o'clock hour, not in the 1 o'clock hour. So we've got these 2 days of a bit of recovery, not much. What does it tell you about the marketplace?
Well, the funds continue to be record short for a record amount of time, and maybe we're getting to the point, and I think we've said this many times before, but maybe we're getting to a point where they just don't want to add to their short position, even though the crop looks good. Rains have been very plentiful over the last couple of weeks. Farmers have not sold very much, so they know they're holding on to, you know, a fair amount of old crop corn as well as new crop. But maybe we've just taken the market down enough for the time being until we get a little bit further down past pollination, make sure the crop really is as good as what we think the potential is. So, you know, December corn was almost $5 back in May, and now it's $4.10. So we've lost 90 cents. Like I say, maybe that's enough for now. There have been years, previous years, where $4 doesn't hold, where we do break that $4 level and go lower into the fall harvest. But I think here in the middle of July, I think maybe we've gone low enough for the time being, but you know, it all depends on you know, the weather and what farmers do, and maybe some outside forces as well. But 90 cent drop in corn and is probably enough for now.
I may note you referenced the December corn that still has a $4 mark in front of it. Old crop does not, or September, the transition month, does not, and that's going to be a rough deal for producers who still have corn yet to sell, and there are many of them. Do they wait it out, as you gave there a little hope there on price? But I'm wondering what they should do.
I think a lot of them are going to wait for, I think they've lowered their sights, and you know, that's what they probably should do. We're not going to get back to the levels anywhere close that we had earlier this spring. I think we just have to be realistic and look at some of the previous years where we've had 2 billion bushel carryouts. In the last 3 years, we've had, you know, sub 2 billion bushel carryouts, and we've kind of gotten used to those $5, $6, $7 prices. But if you go back not too many years ago, 2016, 2017, 2018, and 2019, those 4 years, we all had 2+ billion bushel carryouts, and the average farm price, according to USDA, was in the mid-350s. So, you know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, you know, and we've had inflation since then, so we probably don't need to go as low as we did back then. You know, you add another 10% to those 350 prices and you get up to 380 or 390. But as you said, it has a 3 in front of it instead of a 4. So, you know, for old crop corn, you know, use any kind of little bit of a rally, 10, 15, 20 cents. That'll put it back up over 4. And then there's probably more downside than upside if we do get that 20 cent technical bounce.
I was looking, of course, at the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates released last week from USDA. Two things of note. They changed the wheat season's average cash price by 80 cents. It went down by that much in 1 month. That's an enormous drop. And the new crop soybean price remained at is $11.20. I think it was lower by 10 cents. That still seems like not such a bad price in comparison to what it could be.
Exactly. Soybean prices are not as low as corn prices are when you multiply it by the yield. It wouldn't take much of a rally in soybeans to get you to maybe a profitable level to sell new crop beans. Whereas corn, it's just hard to come up with a profitable scenario unless you grow 250 bushel corn when you're only used to growing 200 bushel corn. It wouldn't take that much of an increase in bean yield and a slight bounce in the price to where we probably can cover our cost in soybeans. So this may be a year where we sell beans to make a little bit of money and to cover a little bit of a loss in the corn. And we've made good money the last couple of years, and this may be a year where we just try not to give it all back in the corn market and make our money in the beans and look ahead to next year when hopefully the input costs are a little bit lower and maybe prices rebound a little bit.
One final note here, as I'm thinking about income for producers, there are a couple of sources. One of them will be crop insurance at some point if things go low enough, but I'm not quite certain where that might be. Have you been considering what those numbers look like?
Yes. The February guarantee was 466 on corn. If you took an 85% policy, your guarantee will kick in at 396, assuming you have a normal crop. If you have an above average crop, that number will be a little bit lower before the insurance kicks in. But at 396, that's only 14 cents lower than where we are today. So if you don't sell new crop corn today, your risk is 14 cents. And then if the market continues to go lower and stays lower through the month of October, then you would collect an equal amount of crop insurance payment to offset any drop below that first 14 cents. Soybeans a little bit different. 11.55 was the guarantee in February. 85% policy means the insurance kicks in at 9.82. Today we're around 10.41, so we're about 59 cents above where the crop insurance would kick in October. So a little bit more downside risk in the soybeans, and that's maybe another reason why to get some beans sold. If we do get any kind of a bump or rally, weather scare here in the months of July and August.
Any final thought before I let you go, whether that be on consumption figures from USDA, total bushels around the planet, or some other thing that I've not come up with yet?
It sounds like we may get an interest rate cut when the Fed meets in September. That will probably weaken the value of the dollar. That will make our exports a little bit more attractive. That, combined with the lower prices, should mean an increase in consumption, whether that should be coming from exports first, but then it could also come from a little bit of feed demand. We haven't seen that in the cattle market, but maybe hogs and chickens can expand a little bit quicker and increase our demand for feed. Other than that, it just looks like it's going to be a year where we have a 2 billion bushel surplus in corn and a 400 million bushel surplus in beans, and we just have to adjust our price sights to those new factors, I'm afraid.
Hey, thank you much.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson of TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Now, up next, a portion of conversation that I held with the CEO and president of the Renewable Fuels Association. It lobbies on behalf of the ethanol industry, as it's related today to SAF, or Sustainable Aviation Fuel. I started by letting him know that my personal opinion was, after seeing airline executives this winter, that industry was all in on SAF, or what Jeff Cooper refers to as SAF.
They are completely all in on SAF, and there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, number one is many of these companies are operating in a policy and regulatory environment where they are either being rewarded or required to reduce the carbon intensity of aviation, of their activities. But they're also under heavy pressure from their investors. And many of these companies have made ESG commitments and have other goals of decarbonizing. So they're under heavy pressure to lower the carbon impacts of what they're doing every day, what their businesses are doing, which is moving people and freight around the world. So as they look at their options for doing that, you can't really electrify a huge passenger airplane or a cargo plane. There's just no technology available to do that today, and nobody's really expecting that anytime in the near term or in the long term future. So what they're really focused on is how can we reduce the carbon impacts of the liquid fuels we're using, and obviously the way to do that is by increasing their use of renewable fuels and sustainable aviation fuels. So they are 100% committed to the SAF opportunity. We've seen major investments from the airlines into you know, these supply chains to get SAF off the ground and delivered to their airports and their you know, airplanes. So it is really been a interesting thing to see the airlines come together with agriculture and our industry to really help get this entirely new industry and opportunity off the ground.
And finally, this is a broader perspective across the biofuels industry, but what policy issues do you foresee in the future under different administrations, whether it be Democrat or Republican?
Well, one of the big ones is going to be this very issue, continuing to put the right type of policy support behind sustainable aviation fuels and continuing to build that momentum to get these fuels into the marketplace. There is a new tax credit for sustainable aviation fuel that came out of the Inflation Reduction Act, but that credit expires at the end of this year, and then it sort of morphs into a different tax credit. So I think, you know, having some certainty, providing some long-term stability in the tax policy and other policies and regulations to support the use and development of SAF is going to be really important, regardless of who is sitting in the White House after November. Beyond that, we also have, of course, the renewable fuel standard, where we have standards in place through 2025. But then the question becomes, what is the RFS program going to look like in 2026 and beyond? And so that's going to be one of the first orders of business for either a second Biden term or a new Trump administration coming in is going to be looking at where to take the RFS in 2026 and beyond. And we, of course, will be very focused and engaged and involved in those discussions as well.
Jeff Cooper is the CEO and president of the Renewable Fuels Association. It lobbies on behalf of the ethanol industry. Let's check in on the global growing regions to see what the climate and weather has been like and might be in the future with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hello, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's midsummer today. It's a very nice low humidity day, one of the few we've seen around here for a while.
Well, I want to ask about those conditions, because last week, we watched all that hot air, really, really warm in the western United States, California. Expectations was that it was going to move to the northeast, I think, or at least to the north, and then maybe drop around or through the mountains, and we might find that here eventually. It stalled out somehow. What's taken place?
Yeah, you know, the ridge of high pressure was pretty impressive. We did see some incredible heat, and we were concerned it was going to come eastward. But the weather pattern in North America is very much locked in place at the moment. And so when the heat did attempt to go eastward into the Rocky Mountains, there was another shot of cooler air that moved down the front of the ridge, which is what we're really dealing with right now. And that weakened the ridge as the cool air went over the top of it and reduced the heat in the west. And then, of course, brought its own source of coolness down on the east side of the Rocky Mountains, and especially across the eastern parts of Canada's prairies and down into the heart of the upper Midwest today, and then through the lower parts of the Midwest here over the next few days, as well as the Central Plains. So it's really kind of an interesting mechanics of the atmosphere, if you will. The ridge is still out to the west. It just lost its intensity. It's going to try to regain some of that over these next few days while the cool air is in the central and eastern parts of the U.S., but it doesn't look like it has potential to get as strong as it was. Now, we may still see some of that ridginess and heat coming over the Rocky Mountains, but now it's something that's probably 10 days away. So we get another reprieve, and these crops are going to continue to develop quite favorably in response.
10 days, what does it look like across the Corn Belt over that period?
Well, this is kind of an interesting setup. We get a trough of low pressure, a weak one, that's going to be located for the next 7 days over the central part of the United States. And what that will do, that'll bring the cool air in. It will also stimulate scattered showers and storms. Now, those will be concentrated on two areas. One will be in the central and south plains. The other will be in the Delta and the southeastern states, with a little bit of that rain bubbling up into the Ohio River Basin area. But the northern Midwest will probably not see a very large amount of precipitation, certainly not in this first week of the outlook. In the second week, the models are trying to make it rain a little bit more. I think they may be a little too gung-ho about that. But we will have this cool air around through most of that period, this first week of the outlook. And that will certainly conserve the moisture while it's not raining in the north. And a lot of the corn crop out there is going to eat it up. I don't think soybeans will like it a whole lot, but it's just a week to 10 days, and we'll get back into some warmth. The days 8 through 11 will probably bring us a little more seasonable temperatures. We'll still have a little bit of a cool bias, though, still hanging back. And we'll probably see a little increase in shower and thunderstorm activity across the Midwest just as the warmer air tries to come back into the region. So it's really not a bad scenario. Again, the soybean crop is going to want to warm back up again in August, and I think there shouldn't be any trouble doing that.
Because the mechanics are interesting for this setup, what does it mean for the Northern Plains, maybe the Canadian prairies in the future?
Yes, those areas are all of a sudden looking a little bit more tenuous. You know, we're reproducing spring wheat and canola, and some of these crops in the southwestern part of Canada's prairies and maybe a few pockets in Montana never really got as wet as certainly the eastern Dakotas did in Manitoba. And so all of a sudden I'm hearing comments coming out of southwestern Saskatchewan and east central parts of Alberta saying that it's too dry, they're losing their crop. I had one gentleman tell me that this is the 8th year in a row of drought in his farm area, and he was going to lose another one. And so he was very disturbed. Now, I do think that the dryness in Canada's prairies is much smaller in area size this year than it has been in the past. But it's all about what happens these next few weeks. Subsoil moisture is still favorable in many areas, and so the spring wheat and canola is probably developing okay. It is or was a little stressed by the heat, but they did get that cool air mass to come in this past weekend, and it's still mild to cool in Manitoba today while Alberta is starting to heat up again. But the break in temperature should have been really helpful, even though there wasn't a lot of rain that came with it. It took the bite out of the stress that was occurring up that way. So the bottom line here is the ridge redevelops in the western part of North America is that some of these areas in western Canada's wheat and canola production areas are going to see another round of stress during reproduction and filling and could end up hurting some of the production from that area. The northwestern U.S. plains, probably a similar situation, probably not quite as extreme because I think there was a little bit more beneficial moisture earlier on in the season in some areas there, but it's still a stressful environment. And we lost a little bit of production in the Pacific Northwest when those temperatures got up to 110 degrees. You know, they irrigated a lot of the crop up there, but that kind of heat is just pretty tough on crops and livestock. And it didn't last too many days, but it still probably left a scar behind.
crop production areas of the Black Sea, if you've been watching the maps, and I know you have, my gosh, it looks like it's been hot and dry.
Yeah, you know, it hasn't been quite as hot as I feared that it would get to be. And the main reason why that has been the case is that the ridge of high pressure in that part of the world has been somewhat weak, a little dirty, as I call it, where there's some showers that appear underneath it. And that's really been very helpful to them. The temperatures have been in the 90s, though, on a fairly frequent basis in Ukraine and Russia's southern region and neighboring areas of western Kazakhstan. And in this past week to 10 days, there has been a northward shift in the heat and the dryness. And we now have dried out some of the most important spring wheat production areas in Russia, along with a very important sunseed production area in both Ukraine and Russia. So we are now at a point where there has to be significant rain right away in some of this region in order to protect their spring cereals in particular, but sunseed too. Now, if you recall, it's been dry all year long in East Ukraine into Russia's southern region. And that's a very important winter wheat production area. And they did lose a lot of yield in that region between the drought and the freezes that they had. Well, we thought that was the end of the game because, you know, it looked like the spring wheat areas were doing really well. But this recent change towards drier and warmer weather as they reproduce is also raising a flag now that it has to start turning around or they're going to have more damage done to their spring and summer crops. There is a chance for some scattered showers in the coming week, no general soaking, and their ridge of high pressure is expected to flatten out. And so it's not going to be quite as hot over such a large area of real estate. But eastern Ukraine into Russia's southern region, where the driest weather has constantly been, is still going to be constantly dry and warm. So there will be additional pressure downward on some of the sunseed corn and soybeans that are produced in that particular region, while the spring cereals will have an opportunity to at least see reduced stress, kind of like Canada, but not necessarily a fix-all.
China and Argentina, very quickly.
China has had quite a contrast in weather recently, from being too wet in some areas to too dry. The central part of China, from Sichuan to Jiangsu, is extremely wet. The latest soil assessment suggests the ground is saturated down 3 feet, and so every drop of rain that occurs at this point is going to be runoff. The good news is, if you want to call it that, is there's a tropical cyclone that will develop in the coming week and move into the East China Sea. It should suck all of that rain out of the east central part of China and bring in some sunnier and drier weather. So they may see a break, but I think there might be a little crop damage in that flood area. Argentina has had unusually cold weather this winter, and the winter crop got planted okay, but it's probably not as well established as it ought to be. The good news for them is it's going to rain in this coming week and warm up a little bit, and that should help to stimulate a better root and tiller development environment.
Hey, thanks much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. The theme music for our program is written, performed, and produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.